full Dharma teaching among its many features. One of them is liberation, and particularly liberation from absolutisms there, and also and equally liberation from relativisms as well. In the inquiry time at this time, I'll take the usual couple of minutes to give a general outline. You can see there's the spare seat here, two nice cushions. Famous tailor, Muslim tailor, I know him very well, Jamal, very dear friend, 35 years. So he runs a tiny little shop, some of you will know, in the heart of Buddh Gaya. He's very famous. Hence his famous tailor. Sitting on a Buddh Gaya cushion there. May you get some good vibes. Anyway, we haven't come to sell cushions. That'll be tomorrow. So with the inquiry time, sometimes from the day, some questions arise from the experiences. Listen to talks, the small groups, issues that you arrive here with. All is subject for some exploration or inquiry. And therefore the investigation is to uncover, to look into, and perhaps for all of us, out of the dialogue, possibly some insight, some understanding may emerge. And that's the essential intentionality with the inquiry time. It's one of the great limbs of awakening. And that may show itself in the inquiry, question-answer, or dialogue, the reflection into one's experience, as I was speaking to you about this afternoon, questions about life which arise, sometimes from reading as well, from listening as well. It triggers inquiry. And human beings have enormous capacity to uncover and discover and realize a great deal through the process of inquiry, through the process of reflection. Anytime the person or myself who is speaking can say thank you. Plain? Right. Anytime the person or myself who is speaking can say thank you to bring the inquiry to a close, it might last 5 or 10 minutes or 20 minutes or longer. Sometimes it goes on for an hour or more. And a couple of shared minutes of silence together. Then I give another invitation for a person to come. And then another inquiry gets underway. Remembering too, that in it's a process of meditation on listening as well. Two people who are communicating, looking into things together. And also for all of you who are listening, do please notice the inner listening as well simultaneously. Not always so easy. So we're listening outwardly. And then what's the responses which are going on as we listen? These responses matter. Sometimes matter far more than what we listen to. What's the responses? So sometimes it's with interest and empathy, and one feels connected with the communication, with the dialogue. Lovely. And then sometimes one finds it boring or distressing or uninteresting or, what else, therapeutic, heaven forbid, or intellectual or whatever. And just to watch the response, not to say what our view is right or wrong, clear or unclear, just to watch the view that arises, whatever kind it might be. So there's a whole process going on, because listening is a great human factor. Much can emerge from it, which is healthy and wise. And sometimes in the distortion of listening, so much trouble is caused in our life because we couldn't listen to each other. So anyone who would like to come. And of course, I've got here the smaller recorder. Actually, there's two of them. And if you feel okay with it being recorded, then record. But just to take note that if it is recorded, then it's in the public domain. Anybody might want to listen to it, even those people you don't talk to, or your mother. All sorts of people order them, you know, ask, request. So, and if you don't prefer not, no problem. We love emptiness here. So we'll just switch it off. So anyone who has anything you'd like to touch upon, from the experiences, from your concerns, from what you have listened to here, or whatever it might be, it's totally free, open forum. Yeah, please come. With the recording?
Yeah, sure.
Sure? And you have to remember Abigail and the good people over in the far realm over there need to hear our good voices, especially yours.
Okay. I've been reflecting on your talk earlier this today.
Can you hear okay over there? And also, if you get a little closer, it might be a little easier. Sometimes our voices tend to drop because it gets a little intimate.
I've been reflecting on the...
And anyone, feel free, if you can't hear very well, lots of space around. Come and sit on stage, I don't mind. I just want you to hear in an effortless way. Go on, sorry. Okay, reflecting on the talk earlier at 4 o'clock today.
I'm having a little trouble understanding how it's possible to put yourself out there in things like activism, making your voice heard, like the example you gave about that how in this country the citizens are silent. How it's possible to do that and without it being based on the factor of anger and anger.
Yeah. How is it possible to engage in action or in protest or in commitment to change without anger being in it? And it's a really good question, and I'm delighted you've come up and asked myself. Tell me a little bit, what is anger? What is anger? When you feel the word inside yourself, you hear, you know, sometimes we get angry. What is this? What is anger? What does it feel to be angry? For you?
I think it's a mixture of accusation, placing blame on others, and wanting others to be different. It's a very strong wanting for others to act in a different way.
Yes. Right. So, does the wish for others to act in a different way for you, and if you can think of any example in your life, it would be lovely. Often, I agree, it can be associated with some accusation and some blame. And the combination of wanting them to be different, accusation and blame, very easily fuels the anger, doesn't it? If not the violence, these three. Is it always the case? If I want others to change, the others may be, in this case, the earlier part of the talk, it would be our governments or whatever. And I looked at the situation. Does the wish for change necessarily mean I have to be angry?
It doesn't appear to imply that.
No,
but I don't think I've ever had an experience to show otherwise.
No,
I can't think of one.
No. So, got to put it in another way. The whole purpose that I'm in this privileged role of sitting up on this stage, because I want the rest of you to change. I'm not angry yet. Give me a couple of days. Does the wish, commitment to change, inwardly and outwardly, doesn't necessarily mean I have to be angry, does it? Maybe with a lot of passion and conviction. What would tell me I'm angry? I think blame, allegations, that easily can fuel. So if you want to raise your voice, if you're interested to raise the voice, what would you like to say to your government? They invited you to the Knesset and say, what's your name?
Yoav.
Yoav. I said, Yoav, we want to listen to what you have to say. What would you like to say?
For me specifically, the issue that is that for me causes me to be troubled in my daily life. You gave the example of what happened in Gaza during January.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it would be animals in the meat industry.
Animals in the meat industry.
And so I don't know if government is the is where I the most I feel I'd want my voice to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
But
say a little bit about. Are you vegetarian?
Yeah.
All right. Good. Good to hear.
Obviously.
All right. Say a little bit about your voice about animals in the meat industry. not everybody in this room is vegetarian, so I've got an audience.
It's scary.
All right, go on, hold your head up. You're not speaking for you, you're speaking for the animals in the meat industry. Tell them what you know.
I don't know what to say. I can't.
I'll ask you. It's not easy. I appreciate it. It's not easy. The raising of the question and something that you would like to say. How long have you been vegetarian?
Since I was 14.
And how old are you now?
21.
21. All right. So a third of your life. Nice. Yeah. And are you, my definition of a vegetarian is one who does not eat anything with a face. Animals, birds, and fish. Strictly. Are you a strict vegetarian?
Yeah.
Good spirit. Mm-hmm. And what made you, what decided you to say, look, I don't want to be contributing to this meat industry? What made you change and say, I don't want to be part of that?
The suffering of animals has always been something that I've been very aware of.
Good, that's good.
I think the last time I purposely stepped on an ant, it must have been when I was 3 or something, and my mother asked me why I was killing ants, and I didn't know what to say. And
and very good question from your mother. Nice, thoughtful, very good.
And for some reason, in the society, it's very very easy to ignore where meat comes from, because no one wants to know, and it's in the best interest of everybody with power that, well, the industry itself, that you are as far away as that you don't meet your meat.
Exactly. So there's a situation, as you point out, that the animal industry in Britain, it's 11 million animals a week are killed to satisfy human consumption. In the United States, it's 60,000 animals an hour. And we, as the consumers, are hidden from it, just as you point out. 4 chickens spending their entire life on an A4 sheet of paper. The cruelty inflicted on these animals in these animal factories. The slaughter of them, all the terror, the injections that they go to increase their whatever, and all the consequences of all of this. And as Mahatma Gandhi when asked, how do we know a civilized society? And his response was, by the way we treat our animals. So, as you point out, it's so much hidden. It just comes in little plastic bags in the supermarket or the butchers or whatever there. Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, it's not just just the cruelty. It's the cruelty is definitely a big problem.
Yeah,
but it's a lot of times people ask me if the industry wasn't so cruel, if it, or why I wouldn't eat organic meat, or
what's your response? Good
point. Well, it's unnecessary. I can do without it. Someone needs to die for it, and I mean, there may have been a time and a place where where it's not a where I wouldn't have the freedom to make such a moral choice, but today
we
have that choice. And it's really, it's almost nothing.
In the United Kingdom, roughly 1,000 people a day become strict vegetarian.
Yeah.
And the majority are women. And I think it's reflecting many, many aspects, both concern about the suffering that takes place. Women know that, of course, very well, and also the consequences, health consequences. So in the looking, how is it feeling, just speaking up to this group of listeners and encouraging them to give up eating the legs of birds and the backside of cows?
I don't know. Usually, I have a I'm very careful not to try and impose my opinion.
Are you? Some of us are not so shy. Why would you be shy to impose or to express a view? Why do we hesitate? There you have love for animals since the age of 3. You haven't wanted to step on even little creatures such as an ant. You've been a vegetarian since you were 14. You have knowledge about the meat industry. There you know how much it's hidden away and how habitualized people are. Why not express a view about it? As you are doing, as you are telling us. It's lovely to hear and very important.
I think it's a combination of two things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times, especially in this issue and similar issues, the way in which people try to express their opinions is rather violent, and usually it ends up being either the result is either that you're preaching to the choir, and the people who aren't on your side from the first place just grow farther away because of the negative because they feel they're being judged, criticized, and the automatic response is to go the other way. The other thing is probably just a little lack of confidence.
Right. So again, I think your good responses and reflections here will mirror countless situations, and others of us can connect, I hope, very, very well with your good words. So one is that if we speak up and if we share our concerns, in this case for animals and birds, it might come across to others as allegations against them, blaming them, putting them down, or might come into the conversation and that other person or persons starts attacking back, gets very defensive, withdraws, makes accusations that you're just being moralistic. Yeah. Should, when we get that coming back to us, and sometimes quite aggressively and forcefully, should we therefore say to ourselves, well, they can't hear, I'll just go quiet and not say anything because they think I'm blaming or judging them, and therefore we just keep our mouth shut and forget the animals?
Obviously not.
Obviously not. All right, nice to hear. Obviously, say it again. I didn't. Obviously not.
But when I try to picture myself trying to make myself more heard in this area, or there are lots of people who feel the same way. There are organizations. There are. I see a lot of suffering for myself in such a course of action.
Yeah. Would it compare to the suffering of the animals?
No.
Right. Don't forget. So sometimes, as you say, you know, agree that if we take risks, and we express our concern, of course there's going to be some heat. People get angry with us, that's heat. They throw all sorts of accusations or rationalizations or reasons or everything to discredit the caring view for animals. And sometimes it is difficult. Appreciate how much inside can feel anxious, and that can start eating away at the confidence to keep one's voice steady and alive, and the confidence with regard to being able to make any change there. But then that would put you rather dependent on the voices of others, wouldn't it? For your confidence and for keeping your voice alive. You'll be dependent on how they react to you. Do you want to live like that?
No, it's one of the one of the things that it's most important for me to work on.
Very good. Good to hear it. We're all working on it. You're not alone. We're all working on this. Lovely to hear from you. So it's one of the areas that we work on. Sometimes it's not easy. We're in matters of love. This is a matter of love. Love of animals. It's a huge challenge to stay true to that love, to keep the voice alive, and it's constant practice. It'd be a very rare day, if I may say, in my life, that people don't give me some feedback about something I have said, sometimes 20 years ago, and they're still mad with me. Whatever, many times, many times. It'd be a very rare day in my life, and still, just tries to keep steady with it. And listen and learn and find fresh, skillful ways to work. But to keep the voice alive, and we're interested in truth and staying true to something which has some element of love in it. Then we know truth and love are close like wood and trees. Keep the voice up. Anything more you'd like to tell them before you get off stage?
Well, I'd like to ask if there's anything specific to keep in mind that can help to keep it coming from the right place when you make your voice heard.
Okay. Just that, remember that everybody who is reactive is a sheep in wolf's clothing. You get it?
No.
All right. Some people get angry, they get heated. Who the hell do you think you are talking about animals or whatever it might be? And whatever that you hear, the aggression, the anger, the negative, whatever. As I say, inside, they're like lambs. Outside, like this. When you hear it, just remember there's a timid little lamb in there. And that's why we have two ears. Let it travel through. Keep the voice of love and truth alive. It's the best of human voices.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. A couple of quiet minutes and then another invitation. Yes, anyone, anytime. Yes. Whatever position is comfortable for you. Exactly.
What are these?
Okay. All right. Good, all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay with the recording?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, so I want to continue, I think, in the actually in the same line
all right.
as this, she was talking about. But this time it's about the Palestinians being killed and not about the animals.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? I'm now just in the process of envisioning a peace project.
Can you hear right? Envisioning a peace project
that has to do with the changing of consciousness in the Israeli public.
Yes, all right.
And the idea that came to me was to have a peace show.
Yes.
Mm. A peace show that would have in it the storytelling and music and film and playback theater. Because I feel that if I want to change anything in the consciousness of people, that it has to be as non-threatening and as interesting as possible for them.
Mm.
I've gotten this idea together, and then I start thinking about, well, what is actually going to be the content of this show?
Yes.
And how am I going to present what I want to present in a way that is entertaining and non-threatening and that opens people's minds and hearts?
Yeah.
And as I start trying to think about that, I start getting a lot of emotional static for myself. Because I have all this psychological knowledge. I have knowledge from Buddhism. I have, I know what things are supposed to be like, I think. I know what the source of the problems are, I think.
Yes,
and still, even though I have all of this knowledge, I find myself becoming frightened. I find myself becoming angry. I feel hate coming up.
With the fear and anger and hate, what sort of areas, where does it kind of land? Where does it go to when you're experiencing it?
It goes to the people who think differently than I do.
Yeah, all right. Sure. Yeah. Mm. All right. Yeah.
What can I do? That's
all right.
Yeah, and this is in spite of the fact that I have done a lot of work on this, that I can, if I make even the slightest effort, I can feel a lot of compassion for, if I look at Olmert, I can feel compassion for this man, and I can feel his basic weakness and uncertainty, and I can feel that this role was way too big for him, and that he just couldn't do it, I can feel things like that, and then all of a sudden, I'll have this sort of flash where I can see myself kicking him in the face. just doesn't go away, those flashes feelings.
The inner listening, as we've been touching upon, one in the first point that you mentioned of finding creative ways, and I do feel that the arts has an invaluable potential, often underused, to communicate deep things, and then the other is, what should we call it, some old reactive patterns are there. Is these old reactive patterns, the fear and the anger, the emotional stuff that goes on, does it have enough power to it to influence the creative initiative?
The negative
static? Does it block or inhibit the outflow of some creative...
It does. Definitely. I can see it's inhibiting. Sometimes I have a lot of clarity of thought, like when I thought of this entertainment, this came with great clarity. And then I start thinking, well, how am I going to give the message over? How am I going to start actually changing people's way of thinking? Then all of these feelings start coming up. So
that, apart from whatever the old disappointments are and all that can go along with it. In Dharma, there's a lot of Buddha speaks of gross and subtle, or general and specific. There's the general. I want something to happen. It is called informing people through the arts, let's say, in some general sense there. And then there's the specific detail: who, what, why, where, how, and what's the main thing you wish to communicate. Is there a real opportunity for the general, the vision, the general, to go to the specific and actually get actualized in this country? Sometimes, in other words, people have a great idea, but that's the general, but the specifics don't happen. Is your sense that you know people or can find people who will take the general principle, the arts for justice, the arts for reconciliation or whatever, and put it into the application? Because that's the big transition.
I have some very good people.
Right.
I already have some good people. I can find more, but I have a wonderful playback theater who already has experience doing this. I have a very good storyteller in this room.
Yes.
And other people. And I have music, and I have a lot of things.
After this conversation, I hope you will have a lot more. All right. So there's the voice. Sometimes it will require from the team or the organizer, whatever, a lot of dialogue. And the dialogue is the empowering factor to all of this. But, you know, good practice, you'll have to watch anger and fear. You'll have to work with those two. There's enough anger around already, and there's enough fear around already.
Mm-hmm.
And where there's anger, there is fear. They haunt each other in the human psyche. Mm. And both of them inhibit. Fear is a block which inhibits response, and anger is that block suddenly being unleashed because there's no wisdom. So there's fear, but fear is blocked. And like a dam, if the block breaks, it gets dumped. People are killed, murdered, massacred because from fear triggering the violence. And we may experience it in the feeling and the thought. I feel like kicking him in the face. It's the same syndrome.
I know.
It's the same problem. It's just in a much more subtle form, but it's there.
Yeah, I know.
And it's part of our practice that we don't want to live this way.
And I say that I can feel other feelings.
Yes,
they feel very sincere. And still, it keeps on coming up.
Yeah.
And
it's sometimes, you know, with all your good psychological knowledge and many, many years, and of course, lovely work with facilitation work, etc. But I think sometimes with all of this, we just have to acknowledge this arises. And it can be sometimes a rather high yardstick or measure to say, if I'm committed in the way that you're speaking, that these involuntary, reactive moments of anger, of dumping upon, whether they're distant or whether they're near, or a fear, sometimes it's a rather high ideal, high yardstick, that this should not be present. This is something we have to learn to live with and work with, but not let, and this is what's happening in the meditator's psychotherapy world a great deal, that there's so much attention given to the fear and the anger that the person can end up feeling, I am not ready to make changes because I've got too much fear and anger inside of me. And then that contributes to a passive situation because there's too much working on the so-called self. And I think sometimes you just have to say, yes, there is this with me.
This is dukkha. And I don't have to identify with it.
Exactly. And there is this creativity. There is this concern. There are these expressions of the fearlessness. And to keep with that and to say, yeah, sometimes I'm really pissed off with the whole rotten system. And to feel that and to acknowledge that. Because for most of us, real change has come from a thorough state of dissatisfaction. And we need some unpleasant negative feeling. We need it. But it won't get us to act otherwise, like the young man is telling us with regard to his concern for animals. And so sometimes, in a non-dual sense, we have to carry both. So, trying not to identify with the fear and anger and change the country, please, quickly.
If it helps, Christopher, if it helps.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pardon?
May I say something?
You can, if we'll have a couple of quiet minutes, and then you can come and say it right here.
I don't want to sit here. I identify so much with what you're saying that I would like to help in whatever you're going to do. And maybe you can put up a list here and have people sign up, and you'll be surprised that you'll find a couple of people that are, you know, are of the same opinion and are prepared to help along.
Thank you, Alvin.
5-star. Revolutions start with small groups. I had a couple of quiet minutes in the last invitation. Yes, anyone, anytime. Next time, maybe. Unless it's going to be a continuity of the theme. Okay, we'll make it later. Any other area you'd like to touch upon this evening? Yes, please come. I'm okay with the recording.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Okay. Yes.
I don't think that the problem is to raise your voice, because
on the same theme. Are we? all right. You, go on. Free space, but carry on.
It's a free space. It's a democracy, so everyone can speak. But
not democracy, but I know what you mean. Go on, carry on.
But no one has to listen. And every war, there are maybe 3,000 people that walking from Tel Aviv Cinematheque to the next junction.
Yeah.
And they have signs.
Yes, I know. I saw them. In the
And after we raise our voices,
yeah,
we go to eat sushi and and to talk about all the beautiful ladies that was in the group.
Nothing changes. All right, okay. Are you thinking that you shouldn't eat sushi and appreciate the beautiful women in the group? Are you saying you should not appreciate the sushi and the beautiful women in the group?
I'm saying that after I looked this situation, and I feel a hypocrite to go to those groups.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the Arab in Gaza really appreciate or even care. Sometimes it just gives Israel a nice face on TV that, oh, against all the killings, there are thousands of people that think differently, but it's a ritual to go to the street and say, oh, it's no good. Maybe you can write something on the wall, but that's it. And
sorry, go on.
There are even anarchist groups, but they are not doing a lot more than like there is a violent and Israel is not India. And our Gandhi is a terrorist who got killed 5 years.
Totally. The voice that I hear carries a tone of some despair. That's the voice that I hear, behind the words or through the words. And I wonder what's contributed to the feeling of despair. It sounds despairing to me. But the entire description.
Yes. No, there is no Yehush.
Pardon?
No despair.
No despair. Are you sure?
I'm sure.
All right.
But I saw that all I can do is to be something like a good Buddhist, like love the people around me and not...
More despair. I mean it. That's the voice of despair. All I can be is a good Buddhist to people around me. What? Whoa. Is that all it can be? Is that all?
What will you do if you was a young Israeli? Guy.
I thought I made it clear in the talk. Let me just ask you a little bit, because I'm trying to keep the politics out for the moment and the inner life in. And we're drifting. It's important. And it's another time and place I'd be very happy to talk with you in terms of the points that you referred to. Peace activism, the Gaza, their views. Oh, beautiful women and whatever. All is interesting. But more importantly, it's from the inner. When you hear from me the word voice, how do you understand the word?
Voice?
Voice. When you hear the word voice.
Ha!
All right. What does that say? What does that voice say?
That I'm empty and... I'm empty, and so it's like...
Would the voice and the sound that you make, what would be useful about it?
Yeah, when I'm talking with you, you hear me and we can...
Communicate.
Dialogue.
All right. Is raising the voice just going out on the street and carrying a banner and shouting and making protest to for some cameras or to give a so-called nice picture for Israel? Is it just defined by that, the voice?
The voice is a metaphor, but...
For? What? See, this is a teaching of liberation here. It's the liberation of the voice, as well as the heart, the mind, and the body. It's the liberation of the voice. What does that require to liberate the voice?
I think the volume outside is so loud that your voice is get lost anyway.
Exactly. So the voice looks outside, or you look outside, and you say, well, the volume is so high, the volume of silence, like I said earlier today, or the volume of dissatisfaction or fears about the future of the Israeli state, or whatever it might be. And then you identify with that voice, which is loud and consistent in its non-speaking or in its speaking, and then the outcome of that has an impact, and that kind of suffocates the voice, doesn't it?
But who said that I am identified with the voice?
You.
Me?
Yeah.
When?
Then. You just gave it authority.
You are the master.
I'm not the master, I'm the listener. Is our voice going to stay quiet because of the externals?
It's much easier
for me not to be identified with the voice of the street.
Yeah.
Because the street is so ugly.
Yes.
So good. it's not me.
Okay, fine.
But but it's when I walk on the street, it's me also. It's also me.
Yes. However.
So.
Is it just you? Gosh, I'm no different from everybody else. Everybody else is like this, but I'm just one of those. That's how I am. With a good Buddhist thrown in. Are we going to sell ourselves out for that? I'm just one of like that. We're going to just leave it like that. Who am I to raise a voice? Who am I to express concern? Who am I to show love? Who am I to stop blaming?
There is a war. People got killed every day. The army make crimes. My army. Yeah. I don't have army, but
no,
Israel army. Yes. I'm Israeli, so it's. Confront with this is ridiculous because there is a war and you want me to do what? I can write poetry.
Good. Write it. Good. And read it at the concert.
And people will say, "Oh, I'm very identified with what you're just saying." It's
never underestimate the power of a poem.
Poetry makes nothing happen. W. H. Auden, another master.
Poetry is a very potent vehicle. Another master.
Who?
You're talking to a poet. As I say, I appreciate and I can understand how, in the looking outside of oneself, things can seem difficult, and my view, listening to you, could look rather despairing, and one could just feel there's not much that one can do. And that voice of helplessness and despair again comes over to me. And it's my small task to try to give encouragement to an inquiry and exploration which dissolves feelings of helplessness and despair, which triggers empowerment, which is fearless, and can find voices really within which help to express compassion and love, and setting no limits to it. And you have that capacity, and you have the voice, and you're willing to speak here, and very much appreciate it. And all I can say, keep the questioning going, and just catch yourself when you slip into generalizations. Just catch the thought, because it's crippling you. It's a handicap. And there's much more to you than that. Okay. Thank you. Let's have a quiet minute and then I'll give a couple of minutes summary. there are the language of the externals. Languages of the externals. Situations, war, animals, whatever. Endless things that human beings are faced with day in and day out. Dhamma teaching. The Buddha has used, little authority here, the language of the inner and outer with tremendous frequency. It's in the great discourse on mindfulness and awareness. It's on senses and sense objects. It's on heart, mind and the world, the inner and the outer. And all of us are engaged in it. Sometimes there are expressions of the outer, as we were listening to in all the three dialogues here, which are having some real impact upon us. And they genuinely really challenge us, as we were hearing. And in that expression of the inner to the outer, what is it in the inner that, as it were, can be brought forth, so to speak, in which something is sensed and realized, which is much greater, and I mean much greater, than the immediacy of the events. And though the events are horrendous, and there are many different kinds of them, we all know them, many of them, yet something about the human capacity, this potential to release something, the unnameable, in which one does not feel oppressed, overwhelmed, despairing, or helpless, no matter what the event, no matter what it is about. And practice as an exploration, as an inquiry, as a meditation, as a dialogue, is this, in a way, constant confidence that the events which come to our lives, the outer to the inner, that the inner has no power to demoralize our life unless we give it authority to. Unless we surrender to it. Unless we submit to it. And sometimes, as we're listening, the voice comes through. With all three, it was a privilege to listen to. And it will come, and with it, one will hear one voice, and up with it is the doubt. The doubt of, can I speak up? Can I say? Can I free the voice? Another will say, what will comes up with me is my fear, my anger, and my wish to hit somebody or whatever. And that comes with it. And then another person will say, yes, but what about the externals? Or what about what I'm doing, whatever, going to the sushi bar or generalizations about India or Israel or whatever it might be. And that will come with it. And I still say, in spite of what comes with it, which it is our task to explore and to look at, me for myself and you for yourself, yet not to let that which comes up be such a shadow that it overshadows that empowerment. It's a great pity that wonderful people's lives are crippled by doubt. It's a terrible pity that people's lives are crippled by fear and anger, or crippled by despair or generalizations. And it's our challenge and our huge task to say, yeah, that's part of me. Yeah, that's going on inside of me. Yes, I have to deal with that. And yet, in spite of that, there's something else as well, which is profound and liberating and opening of the heart, mind, body and speech. And sometimes we just have to take the rubbish that goes with it. And we've got to practice our practices to keep working with it. It's mildly ironic to speak about liberation of the voice in a silent retreat, but, but you know, life never quite, you know. So sometimes just to look in our days, in our practices here as well, of course, to, you know, listen deeply inwardly. As I said, where truth and love is, that's the precious element of the human being. And to notice and acknowledge we are human after all, there are things which influence. The Buddha constantly said the noble ones have their stuff to deal with. Very few who are out of the stuff area. So you say, okay, we're still working on ourselves, we're still engaging in our practice, and we're finding ways, and it's a constant lifelong practice, it certainly is for me, a constant lifelong practice. How can I stay true and clear and communicative and sometimes get it all wrong? Plenty of times. But I'm not going to put sticking plaster over the mouth. Please don't. We rather live with the two together, the love and the and thank you. Namaste. Shalom, salam.